Howdy, partner, and welcome to the Prospecting PA Audio Archive. I'm your host, and this is the show where we dig into the geology of the Keystone State to understand where the gold is, why it's there, and how to find more of it. Today, we're going back to the beginning. Not the beginning of time. That comes later, but the beginning of the story of why southeastern Pennsylvania is gold country. And the trail starts in a place you might not expect. A small town in Lebanon County. Home to a mine that produced 67,000 ounces of gold over 170 years of operation. A mine that, frankly, was never really a gold mine at all. It was an iron mine that happened to have gold hiding in its copper concentrates, like a surprise tucked inside a Christmas present. The mine is the Cornwall Iron Mine, and the story of why it is gold takes us back 200 million years, to a time when the supercontinent of Pangaea was cracking apart and the Atlantic Ocean was just beginning to open. A time when molten rock pushed up from deep in the earth, baking limestone into marble, and creating the perfect chemical environment for something extraordinary to happen. Now, picture this. 200 million years ago, give or take, the world is unrecognizable. The continents are all jammed together into one giant landmass called Pangaea. And in what will become southeastern Pennsylvania, the crust is being stretched, thinned, and torn apart as a new ocean, the Atlantic, begins to open. Molten rock called tholeitic magma, a dark, dense, iron-rich liquid, pushes up from deep in the earth. It doesn't reach the surface. Instead, it spreads sideways, forcing its way between layers of limestone and shale in what's called a sill intrusion. These intrusions are massive. We're talking sheets 100 to 600 meters thick, extending 30 to 60 kilometers along strike, each one representing more than 1,000 cubic kilometers of magma. That's a lot of liquid rock. Now here's where it gets interesting. The intrusions push into limestone, Cambro-Davisian limestone that's been sitting there for hundreds of millions of years. The heat from the magma, we're talking 500 to 700 degrees Celsius, bakes that limestone, converts it to marble, creates a contact zone, a kind of geological boundary layer, where new chemistry is possible. And then the fluids come. Hot, chloride-rich hydrothermal fluids, supercharged with iron, copper, sulfur, gold, cobalt, all the goodies. They circulate through that contact zone, through the fractures and pore spaces in the cooling rock. As they cool, as the temperature drops below about 500 degrees, the iron starts to precipitate out as magnetite. Tons and tons of magnetite. Massive replacement deposits, where the limestone used to be, now replaced by iron ore. But the magnetite isn't alone. Right alongside it, mixed in with the iron ore, sulfide minerals start to crystallize. Chalcopyrite, that's copper iron sulfide. Pyrite, fool's gold. Pyrrhotite, another iron sulfide. And locked inside the crystal lattice of those sulfides, invisible to the naked eye, are tiny amounts of gold. Not visible gold. Not nuggets. Submicron, refractory gold, dissolved in the sulfide structure like sugar dissolved in water. Now, the Cornwall Mine in Lebanon County, Pennsylvania, is the type locality for what geologists call Cornwall-type iron deposits. It's a small slice of a much bigger global family called IOCG deposits, iron oxide copper gold. The most famous IOCG deposit on Earth is Olympic Dam in Australia. 2 billion tons of, or running 1.6% copper, 3.5 grams per ton gold, with uranium and rare earth elements as bonus. Cornwall is the little American cousin of Olympic Dam. Same recipe, different scale. Cornwall operated from 1742 to 1972, 230 years of continuous mining. In that time, it produced over 140 million tons of iron ore. The three open pits, Big Hill, Middle Hill, and Grassy Hill, merged into one giant water-filled hole that's still visible from the highway today. But here's the part that matters for us prospectors. Starting in 1908, the mine began processing the copper concentrates from the ore. And in those copper concentrates, in the chalcopyrite, they found gold. By the time the mine closed in 1972, 67,000 ounces of gold had been recovered. Most of that gold came from a single byproduct operation. The mine was never operated primarily for gold. It was an iron mine with a hidden gold business on the side. The same geological recipe, the same Cornwall type model, is found at four other locations in southeastern Pennsylvania. The Grace Mine in Berks County, operated by Bethlehem Steel from the 1950s through the 1970s. Same magnetite ore, same chalcopyrite, same gold byproduct. The Dilsberg Magnetite District in York County, with 30 or more separate mines operating between 1855 and about 1915. Same model, same gold-bearing sulfides. The Jones Mine, also in Berks County, has 1-7% copper in its magnetite, more copper than Cornwall had, but it was never assayed for gold. Never. The records just don't exist. That's important. The Jones Mine is a geological clone of Cornwall and Grace. Higher copper means higher gold potential. At Cornwall, the gold came from the copper concentrates. But Jones was never tested. That's an open target. Now here's the thing that makes southeastern Pennsylvania unique in Pennsylvania. The gold here is lode gold. Hard rock gold. Gold that came up from deep in the earth and got locked into the rocks. When those rocks weather, when the rain and groundwater oxidize the sulfides, the gold is released. It washes into the creeks. It settles in the gravel bars. It concentrates behind boulders and in the cracks of the bedrock. That means the gold in southeastern Pennsylvania is coarser than the gold you find up in the northern tier of the state. The northern tier, places like Tunkhannock and Mashopin, has glacial gold. Flour gold. Tiny flakes transported hundreds of miles by the Laurentide ice sheet from gold-bearing rocks in Canada, primarily the Abitibi Greenstone Belt in Ontario and Quebec, which has produced over 170 million ounces of gold since 1901. But the gold in southeastern Pennsylvania? It didn't travel. It came from the local bedrock. The source is right underneath the creeks. And because the transport distance is short, the gold is coarser. Flakes, pickers, and, in rare cases, actual nuggets. The largest documented gold nugget ever found in Pennsylvania, 11 plus ounces, came out of the York County region in 1938. That nugget was almost certainly weathered from one of the Dilsberg magnetite deposits. It was the gold that got released from a sulfide crystal somewhere upstream and concentrated in a stream bed over decades of erosion. Now, could you follow the structures that produced this gold up to New York? The short answer is yes and no. The structures are continuous. The Triassic diabase intrusions of southeastern Pennsylvania are the same magmatic event as the famous Palisade Sill in New York and New Jersey, that dramatic cliff face on the western bank of the Hudson River. Same age, around 201 million years, same chemistry, part of the same central Atlantic magmatic province that stretches from Nova Scotia all the way down to Brazil. But the Palisade Sill didn't produce Cornwall type or deposits. The reason is that the host rock wasn't right. Cornwall type gold needs limestone. The Palisade Sill intruded into sandstone and shale, not limestone. The chemistry that creates the magnetite plus sulfide plus gold system requires a calcareous host rock to react with the hydrothermal fluids. No limestone, no Cornwall type deposit. So the structural thread is there, but the gold favoring conditions are not. The same story plays out in New Jersey. The Watchung Mountains, those three basalt ridges you see driving across central New Jersey, are the surface equivalents of the Palisades magma, same event, same age. And there are old copper mines in the Watchungs. The Schuyler Mine, the Griggstown Mine, the Flemington Mine. But the New Jersey Geological Survey documented only trace amounts of gold, 0.01 ounces per ton at one of them. Background levels, not ore. The surprising gold connection, the one that's not in any of the standard references, runs through a completely different geological formation. The Shaungum conglomerate, a Silurian age rock unit that forms a long ridge from southeastern New York through northern New Jersey into eastern Pennsylvania. The Pahakwari copper mine, sitting on the Delaware River at the Pennsylvania-New Jersey border, was worked for copper by the Dutch starting in the 1600s. But the gold is in the contact zone between the Shaungum conglomerate and the underlying Ordovician slate. The New Jersey Geological Survey reported in 1944 that anywhere along that contact, you can find pyrite or rich in gold. Up to $11 a ton in gold at 1908 prices. The Montgomery Gold Leaf Mining Company actually tried to work the Pahakwari property in 1901 through 1911, specifically for gold. They failed. But the geological fact remains. The Shaungum gold pyrite belt extends from Pennsylvania through New Jersey into New York. And it's been largely ignored for the last century. So where does this leave us? partner? Southeastern Pennsylvania has real lode gold. The geological engine is the Triassic diabase plus the Cambro-Ordovician limestone. The same recipe made the giant IOCG deposits in Australia, Chile, Sweden, and China. The same recipe made Cornwall here. The Jones Mine in Berks County is the highest priority untested target. The Dilsberg District in York County is the proven source of the placer gold in the streams. And the structural connection to New York is real but complicated. The same magmatic province extends north, but the host rock wasn't right. The Palisade Sill is dramatic geology, but not gold-bearing. The Shangum Gold Pyrite Belt is a different story entirely, and it's one of the most underrated gold targets in the Northeast. That's it for this episode of the Prospecting PA Audio Archive. Next time, we'll head up to the northern tier and dig into the glacial gold story, where it came from, why the ice dropped it where it did, and where to find the coarsest particles in your pan. Until then, keep your eyes on the ground and your pans in the creek. This is Agent Skookum, signing off.